revolution. Time for revolution. Time for revolution. Time for revolution.
Hey, welcome back to Punkonomics. Broadcasting live on WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. And I'd like to remind you that all opinions stated here today are solely ours and not of those working at Rollins College or WPRK or even the animals patrolling the perimeter of the basement.
Or the aliens constructing the Dyson Square around the recently
Dyson
NASA.
Square?
Dyson
this isn't
Square.
Minecraft.
And particularly the squirrels want to make it a point to isolate themselves from us.
Minecraft. Oh, God. That
the
was
Dyson Square.
Dyson
Square.
No,
really?
It's a sphere. Yeah, I know. It's like a Minecraft aliens. Okay, that was like...
That's also a Terminator thing, too.
If anybody followed
Dyson
those series of
the
jokes...
The one that defines Skynet.
But actually, before that escaped my mouth, Felix was explaining to us how, you know, it's not about having a big government or a small government, but about how you use it. In other words, the balance that the modern era always required, and the government that is needed, too much government problem, too little government, depending on the context. It is a complicated issue. It's not about identity politics. Oh, do you believe in big government or you believe in small government? What does that even mean? So, yeah, there we are. It's an important element. So let's go on to a completely different topic of the Democratic debates, and that's when they hit foreign policy. That's kind of when it stopped being funny for me. It started off, interestingly, with the Cooper guy, the handsome interviewer from CNN, basically setting up the extremely loaded question about the relationship with Russia. Now, you know, there's plenty to complain about and criticize Putin, but I couldn't help driving my daughter somewhere this morning and falling on NPR's Wait, Don't Tell Me, a funny show, clever show. But there, too, everybody was cracking jokes under the assumption that, you know, Putin is some kind of crazy. Russia has just gone ape, right? Running around, invading countries, blowing up stuff. And it's forgotten that, I mean, it always breaks my heart to say so, but we're deeply implicated in all of this. From Ukraine, Russia looks better than we do, certainly better than the European Union looks, in terms of, like, just from the outside, yeah? International law, human rights, political process, diplomacy, etc. And
they
frankly, the same goes for Syria, people. I'm sorry, you know? A friend and colleague of mine asked me just recently, and I was very touched, by the way. She will go nameless on that one. About if I can provide her some kind of alternative sources on the situation in Syria and its context. And that was precisely because she's an extremely intelligent, liberal individual that eventually started seeing the cracks in the Democrat story about the wonderful foreign policy achievements of the Obama administration. Right? So that was really kind of nauseating, to me. And so there's a point, right? That already even in the interview, they already have this kind of, yeah, well, we all really agree that, basically the tenets of American exceptionalism, we have the right to bomb, intervene, do whatever we like, and nobody else does.
That was a direct question to Bernie, no? In the sense of like, what would it take for you to actually put troops on the ground anywhere,
yes,
right? Like,
right. But in a sense, right, oh my God, I mean, to fight the evil tyrant Putin for the freedom of the Ukrainian and Syrian people? And that's really, I mean, you can't believe how much effort is going on for me not to literally my head to explode, right now because the horror of it, right? And sadly, I was able to provide like a dozen articles for my friend, you know, depressing stuff. What can I say? So there's plenty of blame to go around and we've once again created a convenient, recreated a convenient boogeyman, right? We're still well conditioned to hate the Russians, right? So, so maybe it's an easy job. But the Ukraine is extremely complicated, Russia has some blame, but, I'm willing to say that in my view, less than Europe and America has, easily for Ukraine, and even more painful to say, yes, even for Syria.
So what do you think about Bernie Sanders' comment, Benny, on when he gets asked about Russia, he goes to this idea that Putin will regret a lot of those decisions because his economy is in shambles.
Yeah.
And his political capital, so to speak, is being seriously questioned at the level of international agencies and international community.
I think that this is was a cheap shot a little bit. America and Europe decided that they want to continue the policy of harassing Russia after post-communism. They derailed it from the start, got rid of Mikhail Gorbachev. I mean, yeah, we need a whole show for that, at least one, yeah? It was really ill-advised, very ill-advised way we handled the end of communism. And we could have really been in a golden age now, you know, instead of in the deepest hole we've been since the 17th century.
It's so like retro civil war type of stuff, no?
I mean, where do you even? I mean, no, Russia. First of all, be careful underestimating Russia. They can take stuff that nobody else can take. Listen, they saved my family. You know, I remember that the Russians sacrificed some 30 million people. You know, fighting the Nazis. 80% of the time alone, by the way.
Let's be honest. There's only been one group in the entire world ever to conquer Russia, yeah. And that's the Mongols.
Right, and even right, they did, yeah, they did, but there wasn't a Russia.
There wasn't a Russia. there was a Viking
tribe that went up the Volga and settled the the Rus.
Yeah,
it
was like about 35 peasants scratching the dirt. They got conquered by the Mongols, right. And ever since then, nobody's been able to touch them. So
no.
We can't largest win amount of against deaths, Russia,
right? In World War II, Russians are the largest amount of
by far.
I mean, proportionally. Let's be honest, we can't defeat and conquer Russia. It's not on the cards.
Yeah, nobody's that crazy. I mean, I would.
If we had to fight Russia, they wouldn't let us win.
No,
unless they got like coup d'état from the inside. The only way that a war with Russia, an active, hot war with Russia, would end is in hellfire, with the entire Earth engulfed in nuclear fire.
Right, with very few humans surviving.
We cannot win in that kind of war. No. It would just either be an endless cold war, because nobody's ever going to ramp down from that a second time, and then, or just extinction.
And we've been basing all that. I mean, the best one could say here, I'm stretching myself. The best one can say in defense of Obama's foreign policy versus Russia is that he did play the game, competently. I shouldn't have started the game, frankly. it was kind of productive, but and because he did, what did he win? What's won here? Yeah, not much, I think. Again, it's a big topic, and we won't have time to deal with our prime topic. But certainly, this is one area where Republicans and Democrats are always closest, perhaps of all, on the attachment to the imperial model. Well, that is destroying this country, I think, and we need to de-imperialize as soon as possible.
Honestly, let's
and
be
this
honest,
is libertarians say it.
The Democrats are more imperialistic than the Republicans.
Yes, they are.
The entire point of the Republicans is all self-sufficiency, and like, we rely on ourselves and we're independent, and that's a good thing when it comes to foreign policy. I absolutely
But they
agree.
Don't do it.
No, of
Except
course not.
Except for,
We can't,
Ron Paul and son.
That's not what matters. What matters is that at the very least they're saying that they're going to de-escalate and stuff like that and get out of other countries' business. The Democrats don't care at all. They're all about like just
they're
we'll keep doing
it.
What
that's
we're doing
right. And
protecting
Bernie
our interests.
May have I mean to finally answer your question, Jose, I'm reading Bernie's comments about that as wanting to just get off of that. Being sophisticated, again, it's him playing this very complicated game. That must have been a very intense meeting. I mean, how are you going to play this rigged clown show without either showing yourself to actually be a clown or unable to answer, because you're trying to explain and they cut you off and they ask you loaded stupid questions. I mean, how are you going to survive? Your integrity is going to survive this debate. And I think he played an escape card in some sense. Didn't really want to go deep into it. Certainly didn't want to say what I just said, that actually people know. You'd be amazed at just how horrible his, you know, record Obama has on foreign policy. Yeah, you know, and I know this is like the big sin I'm saying here for most liberals. I understand that. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, you know, worse than Bush. Oh, but he didn't start civil wars. Yes, he did. You know, maybe he's cleverer about it. He doesn't blunder into it in some such bloody obvious ways, you know, but essentially, and he picked up where it was, but talking about going heavily into Africa, which is where the World War III is shifting to, well, the Middle East is already in flames, you know, mm-hmm. And Africa is the great, wealth. I mean, that's where the resources are, the ore is, the food is, or the most of it. So it's water. It's really the next frontier, as oil inevitably declines in importance one way or another. That's mm-hmm. happening kind of normally.
I mean, the thing that kind of worries me a little bit about the Middle East is that, I mean, oil is not, it's finite. When it runs out, it'll mean an enormous change of power in the Middle East.
It'll be too expensive before it runs out. But yeah.
And
right.
all of a sudden the Saudis will run out of like power chips to play, and
soon.
The Israelis and possibly like the
might not be that
Iranians
important to
maybe.
America anymore.
Yeah, I mean, why do you want to defend the foothold if there's nothing there to keep?
That's right.
Maybe
That's
they'll
right.
start, you know, hooking up with Liberia again.
So I will, the best I'm willing to give, Obama and Clinton, by the way, is probably worse than him, at least by her record.
Ultimately, most of these decisions were taken jointly because Clinton is his secretary.
And in the Clinton administration, she had influence, I should hope, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. That was not better either. But very seriously, this is just the case, when it comes to foreign policy. It's been abysmal at best, maybe a little bit more competent. So yeah, Democrats can say, yes, okay, yeah, so we're continuing empire all the way, destroy the planet, saw warfare more than ever before, Cold War, you're kidding me, you haven't seen nothing yet. That's the both agree on that, maybe with a little bit more competence in some of these games. So maybe Putin will regret in some sense. I don't know. I think we put Putin in a corner and it was utterly obvious that that is the only, you know, if you're playing chess, right? And there's only, or any game, and there's only one move available to you, you're going to take it.
Right.
And that's, so at best, the strongest defense of Obama I can come up with on foreign policy, and especially in relation with Russia, is that, you know, you played an aggressive, effective game of chess. We're not even, the game hasn't just barely begun, by the way, people, so settle down. If you think your economic sanctions are going to take down Russia, then think again, that's for sure. And it doesn't take a lot of money to do really nasty things, too. So the poor, you know, yeah, keep pressuring, and eventually we will get from them the behavior we fear so much. So it's short-term clever, tactically clever. I'm willing to give Obama that. But long-term, just as strategically stupid as people have been since, at the very least, President Truman, I would say. I mean, very broad here, but when the Cold War kind of was really started in earnest, when the military-industrial complex in earnest its takeover of this country.
What's your views on the sanctions on the Iran?
That's another case where, you know, I mean, yeah, we have to, you know, you have to, Iran is the biggest, most important country in, you know, West Asia. And it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We messed with them for many generations, made horrific mistakes, including toppling the democratic, pro-market, pro-West, you know, government that they had there in the 50s with the CIA just recently. Everybody knew it, but it got declassified. So now we have it official.
And
one
of the biggest problems, honestly, is
not
that
smart.
The politicians,
sounds familiar from Guatemala, doesn't it?
The politicians are very much aware that the average or even the majority of Americans don't know the difference between Iraq, Al-Qaeda, Afghanistan, Taliban, and Iran, what those words mean.
Or
they
even
think
North
that
Korea.
The Middle East is a country, and all of them hate us, and all of them have oil, and we want to go in there, and Israel is just barely holding on against the hordes of evil Muslim people who want to, like, kill us.
But that's the propaganda.
Yeah, but right. The thing is that propaganda, when people believe it, is very dangerous.
Yes.
That,
a few things are more dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, like, it just makes me think of Goebbels and sends a chill down my spine.
I mean,
you
they
know?
Weren't
it's
as
like,
good.
Whoa.
Yeah, Goebbels is like, if Goebbels would come out of his grave today, you know,
he'd have to go back to school.
No, he would be at all. You know, he would be like walking around going like, my God, I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
What a playground.
Yeah, nothing compared. I mean, they had to have secret police and harsh measures. They couldn't dupe an entire nation to, or a large chunk of a nation to
buy
into
thinking
their story,
that an
yeah?
ethnicity, or not an ethnicity maybe, but like a religion and a culture are all, you know, evil. Just like, I mean, people who say just let's, you know, screw the Arabs, let's just go in and kill them and take their oil. That's like,
that counts.
Oh, did you dump that?
Yes, I did.
Sorry. Well, the Americans say to their enemies that, let's, not worry about them and avoid saying any curse words and, just go in there and deal with them and ignore their culture and their, like, history and stuff.
But
and
I
that's
to,
ethnic cleansing right there.
I have to go back to my, initial question. I mean, are they working? Is it worthwhile even taking them away in exchange for better relations on the nuclear side?
It's
late,
you know, it's hard. I mean, once you make such a you mess things up for so long, you know, and again, and then mess it up again on top of it, and mess on it again, because often. America and Iran are similar in one way, especially in the days of Ahmadinejad in Iran, famous like he's president, young kind of firebrand in Iran, and George W. Bush here.
Right.
It was funny just how similar they were and how they were basically talking not to each other but to their domestic voters every time. You know, so you have a lot of these games going on. What to do is not easy. Can you, invading them should be really like, I mean, Iraq will be a Sunday picnic next to that. Iraq is not a quarter the size of Iran or powerful as.
And the logistics are horrendous.
Yeah, you even be, you don't even, I mean, this is just insane. So if we hear people talking about it, they're, you know, it's complete nonsense. But remember, before the war in Iraq, the Pentagon, CIA was also yelling and screaming that this is a terrible idea, right?
So
the expert, the military, I'm not talking about some bleeding heart liberals here, right? Where, no, they were voting for it. Just saying. except for Bernie, right? But, yeah, so it's a complicated story, but does it have a military solution? No. And the bullying through pressure is generally very counterproductive in states, like, especially when states are not particularly democratic, where they don't have the pressure of their people complaining about the bad conditions.
See, I try to explain that to some people who are objecting about this treaty that we're trying to get passed. And what I say is that, okay, well, if it hasn't worked in the last 40, 50 years, what makes you think it's going to change now? You know, I mean, it's not.
No.
So why not at least try to establish some kind of a relationship? Because in reality, I mean, nobody wants to be blown to pieces.
Hey, let me say it. Let me enjoy it. I waited a little bit just so I can savor it like a really nice old wine that you don't want to swallow right away. You want to keep in your mouth a few seconds. Yeah. So let's lose half our audience. more three quarters, I suppose. The real solution to this problem is a comprehensive arms reduction, especially denuclearize, you know, remove nuclear power and military in the Middle East. And that will involve Israel above all. Once again, if that's another, it seems like a small kind of issue, but it's somewhat of the, you know, of the center, a cornerstone in the Middle East. You know, on the one hand, we have the Saudis and other Gulf states that are holding on to power. And if people haven't known that they've been since the beginning, the fact that the Saudis now are other good friends in the Middle East, are killing many thousands of civilians in the tens of thousands, destroying an entire swath of Arabia, against the people who want representation, at least want freedom. Eh? And we're, you know, with our weapons, they're doing it completely impune, while at the same time chairing the UN Human Rights Committee.
Right.
So that's really
we're doing
ouch.
That? Yep. We're chairing the Human Rights
Committee? No, the Saudis.
Oh, wow.
While they are performing one of the nastiest, I mean, my God, making Israel look good.
Well, at least they signed the Geneva Convention.
That takes some doing. But seriously speaking, yeah, that has to be solved. America is key because Israel is dependent upon America. They don't like it. In fact, the Israelis generally don't like Americans, resent them because they know who sponsors, right. who pays the bills, who makes them do able to do what they do. But it's destabilizing, and it's a necessary cornerstone of any kind of stability in the region. And nobody's yet tried to negotiate a reasonable peace solution. It has always been a kind of, oh, I can get you because
right.
I'm more powerful, smarter, better connected, whatever. It was, and to solve conflict between a powerful partner and a weaker partner, the powerful partner cannot resort to a bullying technique of saying, hey, I'm more powerful, so you better take this horrible deal or else your other option is I'll beat you up, I'll kill you.
Right.
That never leads. I mean, for a while you might shut them down as they lick their wounds, but they're just hating you twice as much. Of course. So the powerful partner or party has to give up more than the weak. We've seen this actually achieved with mixed success in two very different places in the world in recent times. One is Ireland and the Good Friday Accords, the oldest ethnic occupation in human history. People don't think about that, but the English have been molesting the Irish since at least, right, the 13th century, and continue to this day, though
right.
in the past few years, there is a peace process that is working, right? And Britain had to be more forgiving. You know, when a radical faction of the IRA killed some British cops or, you know, you can't like go in there and flatten half the city.
Exactly.
No,
right.
No.
Yeah.
You go back and make a statement with the people you're negotiating with and saying, we will not let this escalate the violence. We will not allow the extremists to destroy our peace process. We will keep with it.
Well, obviously the reason why they accepted to do that is because they're white. The Irish.
Well, No. There's a huge and fascinating history.
To the British, maybe, but to the rest of Europe, it would have looked horrendously bad to bomb Dublin compared to bombing brown people.
Okay, yeah, you can. He's more cynical than me. You see that? He's only 18. Just saying. Imagine when he's 50. Yeah. I'd be afraid. I'd be dead. So I'd be good. but anyway, point taken. But I do want to. Irish were subjected to horrific treatment and actually all the race theories, the same ones where it explains that black people are inferior, the Jews are inferior and all that, you know, Irish were right there in the catalog. Well, as they were. Yeah. South Africa also, by the way, lots of problems, but achieved a certain advancement towards peace. Israel, of course, hasn't, and America, haven't arrived there yet. It's a really kind of a bad relationship that needs to be reorganized. I don't say that America needs to abandon Israel. I don't say that Israel is manipulating America or that America is manipulating Israel. This relationship is very problematic and highly destructive for both peoples, let alone their victims, right? So this is not anti-Israeli, by the way. It's my view of pro-Israeli because right now they're going down the drain and it's not going to end well. Another loaded assumption in the question that Iraq was a blunder or a mistake. No, it wasn't, right? It was conscious fraud for a clear, if flawed, imperial policy declared openly before the war. So it was a complete ploy and nobody could have run that invasion. Well, maybe a little better. Once again, you know, maybe we could say that, yeah, the Bush administration was particularly idiotic in terms of doing their stated goals of, you know, creating a permanent presence in Iraq, and controlling the trade of oil, making sure that it's in dollars, things like that.
Now, hold on a second. I don't think that that's actually idiotic. If what? You think as a colonizer, no?
No, right, but they ran it idiotically. So maybe if Obama invaded Iraq, maybe Obama is like retooling the empire to be a little bit more sophisticated because kind of the Bush administration went from like colonialization version 2.2 and rebooted down to 1.1. The British Empire in the 19th century already discovered that this doesn't work, you know? Not smart. But... sadly, that sophisticated imperialism is not going to result in better outcomes.
Of course not.
It doesn't work like that. It just doesn't work like that. But again, we somehow assume, oh, we're Democrats, so let's talk about, so we have to maintain the myth of, oh, Republican warmongers. Obama stopped wars, you know. We just bombed the hospital of Médecins Sans Frontières. I thought we weren't in Afghanistan, really. I thought Obama took us out of Afghanistan, yet we're bombing hospitals there still.
At the same time, I mean,
but you know, that's okay. We'll just send Bono over there.
The myth that us, oh, we're Democrats, we de-escalate wars, we stop wars, Republicans start wars, is a myth.
Not necessarily, though, and to some extent, I mean, if you look at Hillary Clinton in the debate, she was pretty active about, I was there when many of the decisions were made, say, for example, pertaining Osama bin Laden, and she almost uses it as, well, this is my track record,
she's trying to show accountability to the audience, that's all. It doesn't mean that she was right or she was wrong.
She's just trying to show that. It's important to notice these things, you know, because she's, by doing that, almost appealing, using a similar type of populism as...
Different than Trump.
The imperial
guy. Or Bernie, to some extent. They know the nuances of the discourse, they know the nuances of the narratives, and they will use it, you know what I mean, by saying, hey, don't think of me as... Perhaps, awfully, this image does exist, right?
But, well, she
but as
it,
a weak female leader, right? But she's actually putting herself out there saying, I can make these very rough choices, and
even if they're wrong.
And just the brutality.
And that's the problem.
No, she's showing her brutality. I carry a big gun, and I'm, you know.
Yeah, I'm ready to, use it.
So, for her, I mean, maybe it's the matter. I mean, some people obviously raise, oh, she's a woman, so obviously she has to face many more obstacles, including the strength or whatever, right?
The
woman will not she be able to kick Putin's behind? She has to kind of show that, right?
Yeah, she has to show that.
But honestly, never mind that. The record shows that Hillary Clinton is a particularly strong, violent, imperialist with no concern for human rights. She is, by anybody's standard, that's who she is, like it or not, but that's her record. And then they go to Libya, of course. So that was actually one of the high moments where I almost liked them all, there for a minute when they made the joke about Benghazi. And again, Bernie
jumped in it right away, too.
Forget about it. It's a non-story.
Yeah.
Shut up. The story, though, wasn't articulated. The story that Libya, unlike where everybody's agreed together upon, was not, and Clinton especially took the lead on that. Libya was, a third-level dictatorship, a particularly non-brutal, relatively. Listen, no quiet boy, right? But by global standards, one of the nicest dictators, one could say, on the planet, or at least certainly not in the top league or anywhere near it in terms of brutality. The propaganda was horrendous. Remember back in the day, they were, he's bombing his own civilians. Never happened. There was no plane in the air. Utter lies. New York Times, CNN, everybody, Le Monde, New York, London Times, everybody repeating it. So why did we pick on him? For financial reasons, even like internal. I mean, this is really, the world is run by, it's kleptocracy. It's run by thieves, it runs like by a bunch of thugs that make the Sopranos really look like a vote for Tony.
Not a second hesitation
if he was running.
One of my favorite albums by the band Radiohead, Hail to the Thief.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Yes. Appealing to this idea.
Right.
Who's really running this?
Absolutely. So Italy was a hard financial state, owed close to $30 billion in arrears of oil money. And, well, that's not a problem anymore, is it? taken care of. But what's going on in Libya today since we liberate them? I mean, massive source. Once again, we armed the jihadis, because we're not so much concerned with the dictators and that, or anywhere, by the way. We're concerned with the moderates. We might make sure that the kids in the Maidan Square in Ukraine, let's go to Ukraine again, don't get the Western liberal democracy they want, but just get dictators that are under our control, you know? Same goes in Libya. And those crazy jihadis, I mean, that's where we launched, you know, we converted Al-Qaeda to ISIS there, right? But best weapons to the extremists, which of course immediately massacre and push aside the legitimate resistance, who were not even harassed by the Libyan police because, you know, didn't have to. It's quite popular. But it was. But at any rate, the conditions there are horrendous. I mean, tens of thousands of people have been killed. The jihadis are white, and Gaddafi, like him or not, was seeking a kind of a pan-Africanism. So he was one of the only people in the Arab world, a white Arab, you know, a Muslim and Arab, you know, ethnically, that reach out to black citizens of northern Africa. All these people have been rounded up, massacred, put in camps by our friends, you know, where we see our congressmen taking selfies with them as they ride along with the planes delivering missiles and such to and chemical weapons to these people. I'm sorry I'm getting ranty a little bit, but this stuff where I find it hard to laugh about because it's I'll pull the Jew card, you know, hey, I can pull the Jew card, right? You know, this when I see Holocausts, I really can't keep my cool, because I always ask myself, as every Jew asks himself at some point in life, how did the world let this happen? Why did they not help? Why did they even help them for a long time before really the war started? Why did nobody care? So it's personal. I'm sorry if I'm not being measured and rational here. It's a little personal. So yeah, the Libya thing, if anybody's thinking, oh, that was a successful humanitarian intervention, no, is the short answer. Lying, yeah. Then I wrote some really horrible things that I can't write after that on my notes for myself. Just as a cathartic thing. Yeah. No, I can't say that.
The pen broke.
Yeah. Kinda. I found that Webb, the Republican, right? The guy, they accused him that he might switch again. Don't even start me on that, right? Is it on the imperialist side? He came probably the best. I think Barney might be cool about it, but just decided this is a battle. You know, he was accused of not criticizing Israel, for example. And clearly he went and he kissed the ring of APEC, the horrific lobby that damages both America and Israel in the name of Israel. You know, it's not, yeah, it's a nasty institution that does service to nobody but themselves.
Didn't Webb switch the conversation to China?
Well, yeah, right. He has a China thing. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not endorsing it anyway, but I just remember that I noticed, hey, Webb actually gave the most, like, honest, kind of seemingly, like, reasonable, answer. Maybe it's because he's a military person. I mean, a lot of military mm-hmm. people actually, at
are
least in hindsight,
about this type of thoughtful well,
they
of this
know.
Type of thing.
At least they know. They know. You right, know what I mean? Right. Then we can argue, but they're not ignorant. They know. They've been there, you know? They've been trained.
I think he mentioned a couple of times throughout the debate, he went to Vietnam and his mm-hmm. son, I think, went to Iraq.
Yeah, I mean, he played that card. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Again, fair enough.
He's pretty measured politician, but he's not going anywhere.
I guess
well,
not.
He's really tricky, given the fact that, as Benny pointed out, right, he was a Republican.
And it's
right,
money. So. Money. I mean, you know, the big money is with Clinton. That she's the establishment candidate, the anointed one. Barney is kind of giving her serious trouble. Maybe the Democratic elites will decide, okay, we sunk all that money in Clinton, but Clinton will lose against the Republican. I mean, they're having this discussion probably twice a day, actually. I don't, you know.
Back to where you started actually the show in terms of accountability, right? Uh-huh. And not voting for the people and stuff like that. I thought it was fascinating how Cooper actually did brought up a lot of the dirty laundry of candidates. Say, for example, some questions directed at Hillary was maybe not within the Democratic Party, but with regards to gay marriage, right? Mm. Hey, you were against gay marriage before. And I think this was an actual question. Will you say anything to get elected, right? I think that that is a very relevant question in the whole debate, right? Who is actually being genuine about their beliefs and has not a good track record in terms of what they have performed in government, but a good track record ideologically, right? And it seems to me that if people like Bernie, is because perhaps he's the only one who can actually say, I'm the only person in this group that has flip-flopped the less.
right, you know
what I mean? Like,
and again, you know, flip-flop, again, we want to be careful. If somebody changes their mind,
that's okay.
That's okay.
Right. That's okay.
But it has to be reasoned. And listen, I'm not, God, equal opportunity hate indeed, but I will admit, and I'm sorry, that maybe Hillary Clinton has received from me at least more than her fair share. Over the years, it's the only, I like to say, people, I mean, anybody who listens regularly know that I'm not much of a macho. I'm actually a, you know, card carrying feminist as much as a guy can be. But the only good thing I can say about her is that she's a woman. So if I, on my pro, shall I vote for Clinton? Yes or no list? There's only one tick on the yes side. She's a woman. That's a good reason. All right.
And I think Felix pointed out this earlier, right? We were talking about how she repeatedly, I don't know.
She just kept saying, I will get things done. I am a woman. Don't vote for me because I'm a woman or because of my money or because of my family. But then, like, that's all the evidence she was giving, you know? Like, my family, my track record, my money, that I get things done, and that I'm a woman. And then telling them to ignore everything that I get things done, which doesn't say
anything. Careful. No, careful. Again, don't underestimate. I understand as a rational listener wanting to listen to real discussion that it's frustrating. Sure. But tactically, that's her main card.
Sure, obviously. I'm just saying,
I might be not as populist and cool as Bernie.
I will make it.
I'm a progressive. She says, I'm a progressive that gets things done. That's it. That's her copyright.
And here's the propaganda that she's used. And you remember about the Partridge Family?
Very vaguely, I must say.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Partridge Family is beyond your time. Trust me. Right. But anyway, the Partridge Family was the sitcom, that basically reflected the times of the 60s, and it was about this family, the mother, a Hillary Clinton type image, where they were kind of like a traveling rock and roll band, okay? And it's kind of like that whole thing, you know, where they say the Rolling Stones or the Beatles, that kind of thing, where it was them or the Brady Bunch, okay? So the Partridge Family were kind of like the liberal, cool, you know, family, and the woman was the main person of the family. She was in charge. She was doing all that kind of stuff. So I think she's trying to get the American public to kind of rekindle that image from the past by saying like, oh, she's a mom. She's going to take care of us. She's kind of like that cool mom from the Partridge Family, you know, who's going to, you know, get us all on the bus, you know, and head to the tourist roads of peace and love, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And that's the way I look at her. And you know, at the same time, when you do watch the program, that woman was fierce. You know, she was just like Hillary. You know, she made the decisions and she didn't care and she got things done.
She didn't bomb anybody.
Yes, exactly. Well, she didn't bomb them. I mean, the series went for a while.
No, but I guess, absolutely. I mean, that's a good interpretation, I think. I mean, and she, you know, she's in not a good place. I mean, obviously it's very stressful because again, you know, I mean, is she going to miss this one? I mean, she was the anointed one. It was a done deal. And it looks like she might be abandoned once more for, honestly, it's not her fault.
It's not her fault.
Just every time she just doesn't fit the right time, the right place, or somebody comes along that is exactly the perfect kryptonite to her.
And I personally don't think that Bernie is going to bring her along for the ride either. I think Bernie will probably turn around and get, what's her name from Boston?
You know who I'm talking about.
No, but honestly, I could see...
What, Elizabeth Warren?
Elizabeth Warren. I think Bernie will bring in Elizabeth Warren instead of bringing in Hillary. But
I think she showed no interest of leaving the Senate, though.
She's too smart, I think. She doesn't want to go
no,
there.
No, I could see Bernie Sanders and...
Elizabeth Warren?
Clinton as vice president.
Yeah.
Oh, that Hillary. Might be complicated. I don't know. That might be
I could
complicated.
See it done. It would be good for her, because it always could help her career. She might be able to run as, like, just... the second coming of their group next time. Huh? And then, and it's a good way. I mean, admittedly, it means that she can't, like, she can't leave him.
I mean, I yeah. see her wanting it maybe, but I tell you what would be really, I mean, if Bernie gets the, nomination and is selecting a vice president, I would like him actually now. I'm real serious. He needs to go. And I don't know who, but invite a libertarian.
That would be a good move too. Very clever idea.
That would be a historic.
Would get him.
How often
to
does
do
it happen
stuff,
that they pick from other parties?
You know,
like
and claim what Hillary really? Clinton does have right now that you were pointing out. Like, she's a progressive that gets stuff done, right?
Yeah. Right.
Hey, if Bernie brings a libertarian along, he might just as well
because
be.
Because that's the only chance of really going deep into the very structure of the system, which is a change without which all the rest is just cosmetic, so maybe it'll buy us a little time, maybe it's something is better than the others, but it's not solving our chronic problems, and the cluster beep is not being addressed.
And I think that to some extent, that's the main differentiation between Bernie and Hillary, right? That Hillary is someone that still gets, is a progressive that gets stuff done within the system. While Bernie Sanders understands that the problem actually is systemic,
we'll
is the system,
we'll
right?
So it's still kind of within the system, but at least in a more honest, thoughtful
way.
Entirely.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's...
So he said revolution.
He's the only socialist there.
And revolution, of course, doesn't... Not all revolutions are similar, actually. People would look for a minute and think some of the eras of time that you probably think are the greatest, most wonderful periods of history were revolutions, you know? There are many different kinds. Anyway, another thing Barney did, he had some serious baggage with no support from a black community. And my God, what a wonderful question. Also code and everything.
Black
I love that
Life
kid.
Matters.
That kid with Black Life Matters? Yeah. Oh, all life matters. Talk about sweet and complete.
Yeah.
You know? We've talked about this on the show a lot and I'm sure we'll do it again, but Barney didn't hesitate a minute. You could almost accuse a plant because it's true that people have been a little critical of him but then he gave this whole like end the new Jim Crow, you know, mass incarceration. It's like I wrote to Barney must have read Matt Taibbi's latest and wonderful and highly recommended book, The Divide, about the social justice system. Because he basically summarized it.
While we're on this point, there is something I would like to argue. I mean, like, we were talking a bit about it in the car in on our way here about basically this idea of the debate on immigration shining for its absence. Right? And to me, it's an important debate, given the fact that, hey, yes, people, I am Latin American, right? And for multiple presidencies already in my life, I have been waiting to see something being done about it, and it didn't touch the ears of the audience. It was completely irrelevant, completely. And given the amount of problem it has generated to the other side, like, say, Donald Trump, right, given that he got into a fight with Jorge Ramos, big important person in Latin American journalism, and given that he said all the awful racist things that he usually says, right, why is it that Democrats are not talking about it? And I think that they're stuck in this kind of contradiction, right? In the sense that on one hand, they have to appeal to the American labor and the American worker, right? And they're not doing any favor to themselves there by saying, hey, as a human right, you should be able to move to this country and not face the incredible amount of suffering a lot of Latinos and the Latino community is suffering, right? On the other hand, they have to also appeal to labor, right? And be like, hey, no, these people are actually, aren't here, as evidence shows, to take your jobs, no. Right? But they're here because they're escaping terrible conditions in their own country.
And they're not taking your jobs, above all. I mean, the fact
that's my point, right? There is research and research on the fact
bottom 5% is the only place where you find any significant evidence, if I remember, at least from... This must be a study that's probably at least 10 years old. I'm channeling here, but yeah, that question has been answered pretty well. And you have to go really down to the American citizens that are, you know, dishwashing in cheap restaurants to get to people who have any kind of legitimate claim that immigrants are.
African Americans are seeing a loss of jobs thanks to Latin Americans in the United States. And the question is, why is it that the system keeps on dysfunctioning the way it does for so long? And to some extent is because that's how you keep Latinos vulnerable in the United States.
Sure.
That is what allows you to exploit them in the United States.
There's a tremendous amount of profits coming out of that. That's why, I mean, I think it was before your time here. I like to mention that George W. Bush at some point actually articulated a program, but then it was stopped right away because precisely we don't want a solution. It's one of those cases where we love a crisis. The more the better.
Yes.
This is nobody's trying to solve the problem, which is a common theme in this class, some of my classes too, sadly, but also on the show, right? That it's not that we are arguing from different ideologies and perspectives about what the problem is. I wish we would. Then we'd be 3/4 of the way to solving them.
And I think it's something to be said about the Democratic Party. You know, given that the opposition got in so much trouble for it, you know, I think that the Democratic Party could use this as a segue into actually finding solutions and earn the Latino vote. But they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care.
Yeah, but Latinos aren't voting for Republicans. Republicans are the ones very worried, extremely so. In fact, they're probably guaranteed. You have to be Latino to be.
Marco Rubio is in the Republican Party.
He's the forerunner.
Right?
I mean, almost.
Ted Cruz.
That's what'll kill Trump. I mean, many other things politically, right? I mean, you gotta have a Latino, though. That's not good enough because Latinos are not gonna buy that.
Yeah.
That's not good enough. I mean, but they are trying to retreat desperately from this racist position that they find themselves in, which is because they won't get them elected.
Simple as that.
You can't alienate a big minority in your country. I mean, you know,
it's not a good idea to do so.
No. So the Democrats, like you were saying, indeed don't care about Latinos because, and once again, the president, right, the deporter in chief, once again,
exactly.
The kind, understanding guy is the one who treats the
immigrants the worst. We want immigration reform, yeah. But I have the record on deporting Latinos from the United
States.
Putting
them in camps and separating
adults
from kids and horrible stuff.
Yeah.
Unnecessary, horrible.
Unnecessary.
Stuff.
In fact, yeah. Latinos, to some extent, perform some of the coolest things we need in this country. You know,
you regulate, you're gonna have to apply at least until the big trade agreements like the TPP come fully into being, and we do no longer have the protections that we fought for long. To get here, and we do work in conditions resembling that of the third world, you know, then there'll be no more immigration problem, will there?
Exactly.
That's once again, a complete, real issues, and instead we're talking about symbolic stuff. almost, you know, I mean, just like 1984, the novel or the appendix to the novel, right? We've a political language, happily not our day-to-day language yet, but our political language has been kind of mutated such that it's impossible to have a real discussion anymore.
I guess kind
just
of what I'm saying is that on the Republican side, you see an active attack towards this minority, if you think about it. On the Democratic side, you see nothing. I'm not sure which one is worse.
Mm.
To be openly against a particular group, because at least you know, hey, I'm not going to vote for them, because I can tell what their identity is, or basically be apathetic about it and keep the exploitation going on another 40 years, right?
And this another great quote from Bernie from that debate was, and now I quote literally, fraud is the business model. Yep. That it's become there are greatest minds instead of, again, developing new technology, new business models, you know, all of that stuff. No, instead they're developing better ways to defraud the public. And again, I mean, the fraud of this entire process and the rhetoric involved, as well as going, to an industry based on, dependent on securing, disappearing raw materials, at any human cost necessary. As well as, you know, gutting our domestic economy, certainly the weakest elements of it.
One element that was really important in the debate all throughout, and I was wondering, what do you think about it, Benny, was, what is the role of the middle class today in the United States? What's happening to the middle class? Everybody knows it's shrinking, right?
The middle class is shrinking, but it's also too preoccupied trying to survive to do anything.
Middle class is like poor people.
It raises
the question, what's its role nowadays? And I think it's important that the middle class becomes active and starts fighting for your right to party.
I mean, as middle class really loses everything, right? What's the problem with them? I mean, it's a good thing in some sense, stability, right? The middle class is not swayed by radical, ideas because we are a conservative with a small C. We got a mortgage to pay. We have a little bit of property. We worked hard to get. We cannot replace it. If we lose it, it's gone. We're poor.
We have a perspective of both sides.
Little security. That's another problem, by the way. I got to mention, we should dedicate more time. I think we should have a show on innovation because there is that element.
It's
a word that's been used very incorrectly and it's a very important word, but most of what we hear about it is.
We should talk about Schumpeter on that one. Eh?
Yeah, among others, you know, and also the importance of a social security net, you know, for innovation.
For innovation, exactly.
So that if you try, you're dead, it doesn't encourage people to try things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's counterproductive in a big way. Yeah, we're running out of time. So what about as economists, we got to follow the money. So the money tells us, Clinton is in the pocket of the banksters and the military-industrial complex. Bernie, not so much. I'd like to look at it carefully because I remember people saying similar things about Obama. Mm-hmm. But it was wrong. It's true that Obama got a lot of the kind of small donations that Bernie Sanders has been getting. But that was just a tiny fraction of the money he was getting from the usual suspect, the large bunch, and that's why he's owned by them. That's how it works. So we have that element, and bottom line, I suppose we all say that, Bernie came out well for people who want, a change.
Systemic change.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, people who don't look for, to go back to business as usual, to recapture our past glories. And sadly, people who want to recapture sad glories, that's one of the most destructive attitudes in the world. Mm-hmm. In fact, it is the worst one. That is guaranteed decline.
Usually the people who love keeping the status quo as it is, right? And I think the country cannot afford to keep on doing the same thing.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's time to move on.
That is becoming evident to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know? But,
So anyway,
So we agree with thanks Robert again for asking for this topic.
Thank you.
Enjoy a good laugh here. anyway, you have been listening to Punkonomics, broadcasting live here from WPRK Winter Park, Florida. And as usual, just a reminder that all opinions stated here are solely ours and not of the staff of WPRK nor the staff at Rollins College for all that matter.
And if you want to hear which curse word I said that caused Jesse to have to dump it, though it'll underwhelm you, go to punkonomics.org to listen to this podcast again and again and again and again.
Oh, it won't come out.
It'd be hard to. We could record on top or something. No, but
didn't
seriously,
we record
underwhelming,
that?
Underwhelming.
Isn't it recorded on that thing?
I think I said that word before.
Remember, punkonomics.org. We'll be back next week, same time, same station.
Yo.
Take care.
Nice weekend.
We were brought here against our will. We were not brought here to be made citizens. We were not brought here to enjoy the constitutional gifts that they speak so beautifully about today.
because we weren't brought here to be made citizens today, now that we've become awakened to some degree and we begin to ask for those things which they say are supposedly for Americans, they look upon us with hostility and unfriendliness. If you're interested in freedom,
get ready to fight!